Film City Video. This is Russ.
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. This is Russ Burlingame and Zach Roberts.
Hello.
We are recording video, but you're not going to be able to see it because...
it's pretty dark in here.
It is. It is. Also, this is pointing out at the road, I think.
Yes, it is.
There we go. We're coming back from DC in DC.
This is very David Lynch.
Right?
Lost Highway.
We're coming back from DC in DC. It's an event that DC Entertainment put on in association with Warner Brothers Television. They essentially brought together a bunch of panelists from comics and TV to talk about social issues and how they affect their respective media.
Yeah.
There were two kind of red carpet premieres that Zach and I were there to cover. The first of them was Batman Gotham by Gaslight, an animated feature film starring Bruce Greenwood, Scott Patterson, Yuri Lowenthal, and Jennifer Carpenter. And the second was the Black Lightning TV premiere, which is a CW TV series starring Cress Williams and Christina Adams and China Ann McClain and Nafisa Williams.
Is that officially in the world of the other CW Arrowverse?
No, it's not.
It is not? Oh, okay.
And it was never intended to be. Obviously, the way it works is it could always end up there because they have a multiverse.
Yeah.
So very much like Supergirl is not on the same world as other shows, but it is in the same universe.
Yeah.
That could end up being a thing. But, tonight we wanted to talk a little bit about Gotham by Gaslight. Depending on how spoilery we get, you may not get to see this, hear this until Tuesday when the film comes out on streaming. But we will, at least for the first little while, avoid spoilers. And if we decide that we really need to discuss spoilers,
Try to do a break.
We'll do it, like, exactly.
Put out the sirens and the warnings. I'll beat my horn a couple times. Probably not do that because, I'm out of 81. I'm out of Route 81 and I'd rather not, cause some tractor trailer to be.
That's very
terrifying
true.
Or something. I don't know. Anyway.
Batman Gotham by Gaslight, the overview of it is this. It is, I think, the, 21st or something of these animated feature films Warner Brothers Animation and DC have been doing for the last, I believe it's 20 years now. There was a big box set, either for the 10th or 20th anniversary, and I can't recall for sure which one. Actually, I think it might only be 10, because I think that the Superman Doomsday movie came out while I was living in DC back in 2007 or 8.
Yeah.
In any event, the conceit of this one, it's what they call an Elseworlds in the comics. It takes familiar characters and concepts and places them in an unfamiliar context. In this context, it is Batman in Victorian New England at the turn of the last century, where he is a vigilante who wears 1910s era clothes and hangs out with a young woman named Selina Kyle, who is a entertainer / former circus performer who has a thing for cats and whips.
Yep.
And
this lane just ended. Anyway.
But the animated film is, they're about 75 minutes long, usually. We were told that this one was 74.
Yes.
Because I said it would be 75, and I can't remember if it was the writer or one of the publicists.
I think it was one of the publicists. Yeah.
We did some red carpet interviews, which you'll be able to see if you scroll down through the page. I'll make sure that whatever we do gets onto the Emerald City Video Facebook page at facebook.com/EmeraldCityVideo. And, Susie, what did you think?
I'm usually not a huge fan of these things. I've tried watching some of the other animated ones in the past, and I've just been like, it's amusing enough. And obviously the fact that this was in a theater and, it was its own big event, and, you're literally sitting behind the writer, and, we were sitting behind the writer and, Yuri, one of the voice talents.
And Bruce Timm.
And Bruce Timm, yeah.
The master of all things DC animated.
The guy, Batman, the animated series, everything came afterwards. With that, I've always thoroughly enjoyed. I actually really enjoyed it. The writing in it was, and this is not just because we had like super long conversations, yeah. like and hanging out with the writers, very cool guy. But the writing was shockingly good. Like my laughing, there's like a lot of good laughs. There's like smart aleck comments. It draws a really great line, I think. Like, which is something like I think Batman is usually pretty like the Batman series are pretty good at.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, being the smart aleck remarks, like the Batman, you know, like the superhero one liner sort of thing. And kind of the darkness of Batman was done really well. And there's a lot of also in this one there's like a lot of really good period jokes. Which God, I'm trying to remember on the panel. He made a comment where it's like, well, anytime you get to use this word, you know, you got to use this word. Yeah. It's some Victorian
lad.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it was one. But so, I mean, like, if especially if you're like a, you know, a Sherlock Holmes, you know, era fan, like, you'll like this, even if you're not like a huge either animation fan or a huge Batman fan, I think you'll enjoy this anyway, because, I mean, as long as you know the basic idea of Batman and basic things, like you're good. I don't know why you picked this up. I'd be surprised if you picked this up
exactly.
If you weren't a fan of animation or Batman, but I'm just saying, like, if you see it on TV or what, you know, in a couple months or whatever, I don't know what channel. I guess it might be on
it doesn't go TV, it probably just ever. Goes direct to streaming.
Oh, I just mean at some point, like, you know, whatever, but
I agree. I think that, and again, I'm similarly. In spite of the fact that I'm a very comic book person, I tend to not love the animated features. There have been some that I thought were pretty good, including the one of the ones I think is probably the best is the adaptation they did of Flashpoint, which was actually written by Jim Creek, the same guy who wrote this film.
Yeah.
Very much like they called it Justice League, the Flashpoint Paradox. Batman got
that just fell off.
Makes a lot of changes to the source material.
Yeah.
And, that's a thing that, as ever, will be kind of controversial with comic book folks. I know, I'm just kind of finding a place to sit.
Yeah.
It'll be kind of controversial with comic book folks, because anytime you make any kind of change, it's always controversial.
Yeah.
But I would argue that, by and large, they made good choices here. They added a lot. They subtracted fairly little. And they... one of the big things they did, because the original comic was fairly short, and it was a fairly point A to B kind of mystery.
Yeah.
In order to pad out the time, they threw in a number of red herrings. There were suspects who, you know, as you're watching, you're like, oh, maybe it's that guy, oh, maybe it's that guy, as opposed to just being as direct as it was in the comic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it certainly made it into, because, I mean, comics, just due to the layout, don't, you know, if you do a straight, everybody always really wants a straight adaptation of whatever genre, and you're like, well, no, that's not how movies work. Like, that's why books can never just be the straight page by page and order, whatever. You have to add a little bit more of an intrigue, because you're not, there's a visual aspect to it, which I think that this did. I don't know the source material. Like, I've seen the cover of the comic.
Yeah, it's been quite a while since I read the comic. I actually, there was, when I kind of reread up on it, there was a lot more changed than I had remembered, because it's been so long since I read it that a lot of things that I didn't remember, I just assumed I didn't remember.
Yeah.
But then when I read the plot synopsis for the comic, I was like, oh, wow, there's a lot of stuff. Like, there, one of the things that was very popular in later Elseworlds stories, be it Red Sun or The Nail or Kingdom Come, was this idea of taking the supporting characters of these heroes and placing them in the same context as Red. So it's not just Batman in Victorian era Gotham City. It's also, you know, Selina Kyle's there, Cyrus Gold is there, who you would know as Solomon Grundy from the comics. And one of the nice things is, I think, by and large, it's not necessary to know who these people are in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it, nobody is there as a conspicuous wink and a nod cameo.
Yeah.
A lot of the people who are there in, you know, that role of, hey, aren't we clever, nudge, nudge, that's a character who would have needed to exist anyway to facilitate a different part of the plot.
Yeah.
And in this case, they're just giving that person a familiar name.
Yeah. even one of them, like, who clearly I could see, like, that didn't make it out, which was a surprise, which also was its own, like, twist. And what interests me is this, I think that they introduced some characters and then they, like, not like they let them go, like, wasn't the, like, because I was keeping an eye out for any spoilers or anything that might have, I'm sure there was that I didn't see, but there's nothing like that was at least obvious enough for me to be able to see it. But what I was interested in is that they, and I, God only knows whether they actually were planning it or whether it was just one of those questions somebody asked during one of the panels or the I forget whether it's red carpet or panels that we make, whether this is like setting up a world or whether it's a sequel. Right. The writer, of course, I don't think he would ever say no. It's a finished it's a finished universe because who the fuck knows if this
and
does
the comic
like
had a sequel, so it's kind of built in. Yeah.
And I think it's set up a big enough world that I think that it'd be very easily done. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's set up a storyline that I think that you could do the continued stories very, very easily.
Right.
And in fact, now that I'm into it, like I would certainly like the first film. I'm talking theoretical first film.
Right.
The first film was good enough that I would certainly watch a second one because I like this world is interesting and they built it out so it's not just a gimmick when you're throwing like what was it, the Sherlock Holmes episode where they're like in Victorian England or whatever and you're like, oh, I see what they did there, and it's
and they had a lot of little winks and nods to Sherlock Holmes because obviously Batman is the world's greatest detective, and so if you set it in the early 1900s, the idea would be that Sherlock Holmes is still alive, and so the idea of calling Batman the greatest detective is immediately becomes, well, how does he relate to Holmes?
One thing I liked when they were talking about on the panel, and again, that's available on live stream on DC. I'm sure comic book has reposted.
It'd be weird if they actually. I don't know if they live streamed the panel. Did they?
I think they did.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
The panel, however, will spoil the mystery for you.
Oh, no, they didn't then.
Yeah.
No, they didn't then.
Because they asked us not to run our video. We will have video, which I'll put up.
Yeah, I'm sure that people were recording it on their phones, so I'm sure it's out there. If you care about, there's enough plot twists and like along the way that just even like in the first 15 minutes of the film, like just basic things. Like I already spoiled a little bit, like where a recognizable character dies like right away, and you're like, oh shit, which is one of those. I'm like, oh shit, they're introducing this character. That'll be really interesting. Oh. I think she died. Well, anyway,
She definitely dies because they reference in a later scene.
Her dad. Anyway. No.
And there's at least two, actually three kind of name characters who are recognizable to Batman fans who die in the course of the movie. But part of that is the fact that they trim away like original characters created for the story for the most part and replace them with that family kind of analogs.
Yeah.
And so there's just not that many people to kill in a murder mystery who aren't recognizable characters.
Yeah. I will say, like, what I was building on with the, mentioning Sherlock Holmes is the fact that in the panel they discuss like the amount of research that they put into like it's centered around the World's Fair and they did a massive amount of research, I guess, like getting original photos from the World's Fair Chicago, I think they said, was it the Chicago's World Fair they based on which also, if you know, what is it, Murder in the White City or something like that?
Devil in the White City.
Devil in the White City.
Eric Larson, but not
that Eric Larson. Larson. Yes. And also not the Eric Larson that just liked one of my tweets. But anyway, there's so many Eric Larsons. That's something that, like, you know, is also, like, on these things. Because usually, I can't say necessarily for the WB ones, but, like, especially for a lot of, like, comic book animated things, they're so, like, like, oh, we have this property, let's use it, and let's build an animated thing so we can make money off of it. And it's not, there's not like a real big heart and soul into it or depth right. to these things. This thing is, though, it has its own very interesting animation style, which I think works like 8 out of 10 times.
Yeah, there's some little wonkiness.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of that, I think, is because they do that thing that the Batman animated series did of blending yeah. hand-drawn animation style with like a CG animation style. Yeah. But the CG animation style that they use has not evolved much since Batman yeah. the Animated Series, and it's been 25 years, so every now and again you look at some of the CG and you're like, why is that there?
But I think it's also, I mean, I think to its credit, it's a style now.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Now, after Batman the Animated Series, like, this whole look is a style. The other thing, too, is that I would bet any amount of money watching it on a small screen. Like, we watched it on a really big screen yeah. at the museum. Really cool. Like, even though they couldn't figure out the depth a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's a little bit at the bottom of the screen cut out. But it was not only is it really cool to see something that, you know, you probably this will be, maybe there'll be one or two other screenings of this ever on yeah. a big screen. But on TV, I highly doubt.
Yeah.
I would say the animation was great. Not. Like, there's just some things you're like, when it's blown up to movie, yeah, literally movie screen yeah, size, exactly. you're like, oh, yeah. But it's really, really cool. The style, like, because it also commits to the style, which I like. But
one thing I think will be interesting is to see the reception of this. I mean, because it's Jack the Ripper story, and yeah. inherent in being a chapter of Jack the Ripper story. First of all, it's an R-rated.
Yep.
And it does. It earns the R rating. It's not particularly gory or gruesome.
Yeah.
But there's enough blood splatter, and there's a couple of curses. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, don't let your 13, you know, if your kid reads, like, actual,
superhero
like,
comics.
Yeah, then I think they're fine.
Yeah, probably.
And has an understanding of what a prostitute is and things like, yeah. you know, things like that. I think you're pretty fine.
Yeah, I don't think they even like say prostitute in the movie.
It's, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's obviously alluded to it because it's Jack
women
the Ripper.
Of,
it's,
yeah. you know, disrepute and things
yeah,
like
exactly.
that. Yeah, but yeah.
But yeah, I'm curious as to whether there will be a backlash because implicit in doing a Jack the Ripper story, there's like misogyny and there's violence against women and all these things that right now are not good optics in Hollywood in general.
Yeah.
And certainly the fact that a couple of the victims are like characters who people care about, like I can see it being a thing. It really, to me, I didn't feel like that overpowered anything in the movie. Because, I mean, it was a Jack the Ripper story.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like, that's what happened with Jack the Ripper.
But I think that by far, especially considering, and I'll say that this Batman, I'm trying to think of, like, another equivalent that people outside of, like, comic, you know, actual,
yeah.
like, real comic book fans would recognize. This is, like, Batman Begins Batman. Like, he's not just figuring things out. He gets his ass handed to him several times.
Yeah, he's very green.
And, you know.
There's a reference to the fact that he just started showing up a few weeks, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah, this is, like, not just year one. This is, like, month 2
yeah,
Batman yeah. and he's figuring things out. I mean, he has a grappling hook type thing and a couple other like steampunky type things
yeah.
but I would say that that at least one of the like by far the most badass character in every level, not just
yeah.
oh she kicks ass and does whatever, but no, like literally she's like feminist, she's an activist
yeah.
and like she's a social justice warrior of the time
yeah, yeah.
literally and figuratively in the fact that she basically can kind of stand up to Batman
yeah.
And so you know
she's Catwoman
yeah of course yes yeah. yes Selina Kyle yeah but so I mean like I think that the fact that they added that which is a very good point considering the whole idea of the panel and why they released it at this was
yeah.
within this world. And so it's like was in within this weekend.
Yeah.
Even though this was a separate event, it was the Friday night to the Saturday.
Yeah, it was an interesting like it was branded as part of the DC and DC weekend.
Yeah.
But really the Friday night was only Gotham by Gaslight.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, Gotham by Gaslight didn't have a presence and it was
yeah.
all about the politics.
Well, except for you know, a couple
yeah.
people on the red carpet or black carpet. carpet, actually. The Black Lightning carpet.
Black Lightning carpet.
Which is actually really cool.
They did have the cast of Gotham by Gaslight.
Yes.
And in fact, you can... This won't spoil anything. I'll make sure before I post this to post a YouTube link to the two guys in sweaters.
We have an exclusive.
We do. We have an exclusive with the two guys in sweaters.
Yes.
Which, trust me, you want to watch.
Yes. We really, really hope that it's funny to other people and not to us.
Yes.
We're like punch drunk at that point.
Yeah.
With exhaustion after doing a 12-hour day.
Yeah. I think you're right. Carpenter really did a good job delivering Selena as well.
Yeah.
And the animation on her was very good in terms of they did a very good job of not... If she's Catwoman, it's easy to hypersexualize her.
Oh, yeah.
Also, in the context of this movie, she's, like, an actress. And
yeah, she's a burlesque performer. Or whatever. I forget what her officially she's doing. But.
And so they very easily could have gone a lot more cheesecakey than they did. I thought they did a really good job of kind of finding the volume for her.
Yeah.
I also thought that they did a really good job of... Just drawing.
Is there literally a line where she says, "I can wear what the fuck I want"? Like, basically, she doesn't swear, but
yeah.
I want to wear, like, because literally, there's at least one or two guys who are like, I think it was at the, not the chief, was it the chief of police who was like yelling at getting the woman out of here? And, she stands in that early moment when.
I think at the World's Fair, there's an early scene where she raises some objections to the fact that the police have not been doing enough to protect. You know, young women who are being victimized by the Ripper. And that scene, I think you're right. I think Chief Bullock...
There's some comment about clothes or something.
Yeah, and Gordon has to kind of come to her side and basically be like, she's a member of the community. People listen to her, stop it.
Yeah.
I thought that it was a very good... And again, like, from the context of I don't usually love these movies...
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this one. It's not world-changing or anything, but it's a lot of fun. And I always loved the Elseworlds stories in general because it does give you a different view of kind of these iconic characters in a way that makes you really question kind of what lies at the root of them, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of these things. And like, there was one called Cal. It was Superman. As a Knight of the Round Table, and there was one about Batman and Hedy.
Wasn't the Transformers and Bumblebee there too? Anyway,
but there was one where I think Bruce Wayne gets a Green Lantern ring and all that, and, like, stuff like that. I've always really enjoyed the Elseworlds, and I thought this is good. Kind of, this was the first officially branded Elseworlds story back in, I think, 1988 or something. Prior to this, they'd had a couple of things that were kind of sort of Elseworlds-y, but they were never branded that way, or at least not
more
branded
of a
that
what-if sort of thing.
Well, I mean, part of it, too, was that prior to the Crisis on Infinite Earths, DC had a number of, you know, an infinite number of alternate Earths.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to have an Elseworlds banner, because you could literally just say, hey, here's a story that takes place on Earth 274.
Yes.
Whereas once DC got more... Like, once after 1985, 86, when DC had one coherent timeline that everybody had to fit into, Elseworlds became a way for them to say, oh, well, we're going to tell some stories that don't, quote-unquote, count, but we thought that they were good enough to tell.
Yeah. I mean, I always enjoy these because you don't have to know what's going on.
Yeah.
Currently, like, Flashpoint, like, I always feel like, okay, so if I'm going to sit down and watch anything with Flashpoint, I'm like, I gotta have some goddamn fucking clue what's going on, and, you know, like, I'm still trying to catch up on Flash and the CW universe, and then you're like, oh, Flashpoint happened, and I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, wait, does that mean I can start watching after that? But, like, these ones, like, I know who Batman is.
Yeah.
I know who Selina Kyle is. I know who, you know, Poison Ivy is. I know who these people are.
Jim Gordon.
Yeah, I don't need to know, like, literally, if you've seen, you know, the Nolan films, you can watch these and know. You know, and honestly, I if you have an idea of who Batman is, which I would imagine that everyone knows who Batman is. At least as he's a detective and wears
a bat suit.
Sorry, there's this great scene. They're fighting on top. which actually is a spectacular scene. Not only just the idea of it, but also like the animation, the way he did it, and everything like that. It's super fun. Where he literally gets the ears chopped off of his chopped off, Anyway, but there's like a lot of really great moments like that within it, which I think stand out as. Not even great animation, but like super, like the fight sequences were incredibly fun and long too. Like that one, that blimp scene.
That felt like
4 minutes. Yeah. Like, which is a pretty big,
And it's one of those things you can do in animation that's hard to do in live action.
That would be a $150 million scene, even with CG.
So I'm trying to think if there's any other kind of really important thing. The scoring in it was really good.
Yeah.
The music in these DC animated movies tends to be kind of hit or miss. This one, I felt like they did a really strong job of essentially bringing the traditional kind of orchestral Batman score to the turn of the century without making it feel too much like, you know, Nickelodeon music or something.
Yeah.
And I mean Nickelodeon as in old penny theaters, not actual, like,
not actually
TV network.
Nick. Which would also theoretically. Just to finish the I'm like super happy with like the way as always taking the banner of the social justice warrior when we do these things. I can't see any. Personally, I can't see any problems. There will always be people who find problems. But it super works. Unfortunately, should add, since we know this, none of the female cast members, they were asked, and they just couldn't make it to the panel, so we didn't get to hear them. But so that was a thing, just so you know.
Yeah.
they've been asked, and it just was, since it's in D.C., everybody who we talked to this weekend was like, it's super awesome to do this in D.C., because this never happens in D.C., but that also means that, you know, if you're a New Yorker or you're, as most people are, California, you know, work in the industry or especially acting.
No one
could make it. But
even beyond that, it seems to have been put together fairly quickly in terms of a couple of months. So I think in the case of both Carpenter and also Griffin Gray, they had, I believe they had convention commitments.
Yeah. How many other things? There's like four other conventions.
Yeah, there's an Ace Comic Con going on this weekend that has like the entire cast of Civil War there.
Yeah.
And there was some other thing I can't even recall.
Yeah, somebody else. Yeah.
There was a lot of... And I mean, the nature of the like nerd industry at this point, because of how popular the movies and TV shows have become, is that every weekend there's like three legitimately good conventions that are appealing talent away from one another.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a fair thing to raise, especially we'd seen somebody online had written a piece questioning that and suggesting that because of the political and cultural nature of the DC and DC event, that perhaps the lineup for the Batman Gotham by Gaslight panel could have been more than just white dudes.
Which is now talking about white dudes, but like just literally brought me up and they were like, Alfred's fantastic in this. The portrayal of Alfred, because like he's Stark, he has his own moments, which is not something that always happens in a lot of Batman stories. But
I will say it's also a little bit more of a traditional Alfred than we've gotten in a while, because Alfred has become kind of like the he's Bruce's technical support, he's Bruce's bodyguard, he's Bruce's everything. In this one, it's very much he's an old school British butler. You get a couple of the lines where he's like, "I'm sorry, sir, I forget myself," and the snark that he raises is mostly about the fact that Bruce's nighttime proclivities prevent him from being a grown up and like going and starting a family,
running
the family trust or whatever.
Yeah, But also that whole kind of sidetrack with the orphans and things like that.
Yeah.
I dug that.
Yeah, there's a subplot that was added for the movie that involved three kind of street urchins, and if you read the comics, you'll recognize their names, and it'll be a cool, fun little thing. If you don't read the comics, it's an Oliver Twist pastiche, so it doesn't really matter who they are or aren't.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I'd highly recommend it. I would say it's like a B+ kind of movie in the sense that, like, for me, 75 minutes is it never feels like it's going to be the kind of epic that I really want these things to be. But at the same time, this is a very good adaptation of a very good comic. And there's really no big piece that's missing.
No.
Other than just the fact that, you know, it's a direct-to-DVD animated feature film that runs in, that clocks in at 74 minutes. Yeah. And so it feels like that, you know. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that if it was, like, say, to make it the 90 minutes, it's like regular feature, I think that then it would just, like, you could literally add 15 minutes of, like, setting up a world where there's a sequel.
Yeah.
Or, like, the fact that this is, like, setting up the event, you know, like, not the Avengers, but Justice League.
Yeah.
Right world.
It's one of those things, too, where adding another 10, 15 minutes would probably triple the cost.
Yeah.
Because if this was 90 minutes instead of 75, then some of the things that we're willing to forgive in terms of the animation and in terms of the whatever that you're like, ah, it could have been better, but like for this kind of movie, it's terrific. You would expect more, and you would expect more investment. And so it's that weird thing of like, adding another 10 minutes wouldn't be adding another 10 minutes. It would be tripling the budget.
It does seriously, though. I mean, and you know, we commented already on the, like, the coolness, but also the drawbacks of seeing it on, like, an enormous screen.
Right, right.
Like, it does make me, like, I don't know if there was ever a day in it where this was a thing, but, like, I just wish that the way that theatrical distribution worked, that we could be more likely to see these things on screen. Like,
yeah, I mean, we got a couple of them. Obviously, The Killing Joke.
But aren't they usually... Those are usually through...
Like, Fathom events.
Yeah, Fathom
like
events.
Two-night events.
So it's like, it's not... Yeah, and they're always like, oh, it's a Tuesday at...
At 7.
Yeah. It's like, oh, let's pick a more inconvenient time to see this.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those, like, I really do wish that we could see them... on a bigger screen, because like surprise, and also, I mean, they worked even with the projection and I don't know what else we can add to it.
I think this is a good place to wrap. Everybody like, rate, and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called now, or your podcast machine of choice. You can follow us at ECV_podcast on Twitter and Instagram, and you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/EmeraldCityVideo. You can follow my wacky antics at Russ Burlingame on Twitter, or look for me at comicbook.com, which is my day job.
Yes.
Zach?
You can find me on Twitter at ZD Roberts, and on Facebook, Zach D. Roberts, and also go and check out my slowly growing news site, visu.news, visu.news, where it'll be a lot more political.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening, and remember, be kind, rewind.
Welcome.